Good morning. Lovely to be here. Thank you very much for the opportunity. I rather remissly managed not to get to the last two, so I'm really delighted to be here. I want to talk about the frame and how we approach holography by using the frame. And I think a few of the things that I want to talk about now connect back and resonate with some of the things that people said yesterday. Particularly in that sense when we're looking at holography and education, there is a desire amongst the audience to introduce holography to a group of people that are not familiar with it. Now that might be physics students, it might be art students, but we all appear to be attempting to try and introduce holography to people who are unfamiliar with it. And part of the way that we do that, I think, is by the way that we present it and by the way that we frame it. So what I'm going to do is I want to try and have a quick look at some of the things that I think are issues in the way that we present work, in the way that we use the frame, the traditional concept of a frame. So I'm going to look at the frame as boundary, the frame as support, and the hologram as frame. It will all become clear. I just wanted very briefly to show you where I came from before I got involved in holography. A lot of the work that I did was projected light onto sculptures that weren't visible. So all of the pieces on the screen there are three-dimensional. They occupy the space in the center of a room, but they have no physical solidity. They're generally light projected onto an object that's made to receive that light. So it's not a traditional sculptural question of dealing with the object and looking at the object. It's dealing with how the object captures the light and reflects it back to us. So some of these are kinetic. The one on the top right, that's beams of light which are appearing in a column of steam. So there's no physical solidity. You can walk through that. It's kinetic. It looks completely three-dimensional. So it's sort of unsurprising that I would attempt to move that over into holography when I was exposed to it. And some of you might be familiar with that piece, which is one that I did with Light Fantastic years ago. So, and that was a direct attempt to translate the quite large-scale animated kinetic light projection, which is on the left, and somehow deal with it in a way, deal with it in holography. And what I want, the reason I put it up is that this is very traditionally framed. 8x10, black frame, nice metal black frame, put it on the wall, we're all okay, it's good. So I'm now going to contradict that premise, because I don't think that's good. For lots of reasons. Yeah. Okay, I think there are other ways of trying to interrogate the way that we present information in holography. And the only reason I mention this is I haven't talked about this much at all, but the only reason I mention this is that when I did some, when I did research leading to a PhD, the goal that I sort of set up was that I did not want to write a thesis, that this was going to be an academic PhD, but the output, the research output, was practical. They were the holograms. So it was that question of how do you present that in an institutional framework which demands a particular conformity. And all of you that work in universities or academia or have tried to do any higher research projects, you know these rules that they go, oh, no, you have to do it like this, you have to do it like this. And I was quite lucky in that when I did mine, I did it in a university, Reading University, who'd never done one before, so they had no idea. Which meant they went, oh, just go away and do it. And it wasn't without its issues, but it meant that this was my thesis. It's a file box, handmade, beautifully made. I didn't make it. Some master craftsman made it. And it contains all of the holograms that I produced during the course of the research. It contains a document which backgrounds the information. So the text is a support for the practice, not the other way around. And there's a light in there, so you can take the hologram out, and you can light the thing up. So it was about how you actually present that piece of information. And it was the start of me trying to deal with working with a frame. So that 8x10 hologram is actually hanging in front of a baseboard. So it's very much about you understanding that the hologram is this piece of glass. The hologram is an object. It's something that that I want to sort of try and address. Now, I'd love to say this is the view out of my window at home, but actually it's just down the road. This is Derbyshire. I live in Nottinghamshire. Gorgeous, absolutely brilliant landscape. And when we go and look at the real world, the natural world, we're really, really good at assessing how three dimensions work. We understand, we look at it and we go, three dimensions. This rock wall is close to us, that tree is in the mid-ground, the blue sky is in the distance. We know this, and the reason that we know it is that we apply this set of an analytical criteria. There are 9 of them. And even if we don't know what the words mean, we do it like that. I mean, we're good. And we haven't learnt this. We've absorbed it through osmosis and being alive. But, you know, the perceptual psychologist will tell you that's what we do. So that's how we look at the real world. That's what you're doing with me now. You're doing all of those things. I'm being analysed. And you're doing it really, really quickly. Now, let's look at the sort of the standard layout for a hologram. We've got this table, we've got this optical thing, and we've got this little window, this little block that's going to record the hologram. This starts to cause a few problems, I think. That's our holographic table, right? We put a hologram on it, and we illumine. I'm using a laser transmission hologram as an example because it's sort of the genesis of the process, and quite a lot of people first become familiar. If you think about most of the shots of holograms in magazines, the early days, they're all laser transmission holograms. You know, particularly Leith and Neupert next to. So it's lit from behind. Now, I think there's a demarcation here in spatial awareness and our understanding of how we approach it, and it makes sense when we talk about the frame because. If you draw a line through this setup, everything this way in front of the line belongs to us. It's the viewer's space. It's where we choreograph our engagement with the hologram. And if you just watch people, you know, it's like Dietmar was saying, his son did all of that, you know, that stuff. We might not be quite as energetic, but we still do the sort of, you know, that. That's our space. Everything behind that line is the hologram space. That's this illusionistic, three-dimensional, whatever is there thing. And if you cross the line, it causes a problem because, you know, you go behind that line and you look back through the hologram, and there's bugger all to see. You can't, there's nothing there. Come back again, there's something there. So this is a very strange setup. And when we frame holograms, you know, we talk about holography as being a window with a memory. If that's the case, when we look through that window out at the brilliant landscape, we do that 9 stages of analysis. We know it's 3 dimensions. Rectangle, something on the other side of the rectangle, 3D. Brilliant. We've still got a demarcation dispute here. Everything in front of this line belongs to us, and everything behind the line is the real world, maybe. Now, that happens in traditional installations and galleries. It's happening here. Most of those holograms are framed and they look like graphics. Why do we do that? We do that, I think, because we want to try and introduce people to something that's familiar, then we understand about pictures in frames. But we've still got this demarcation line. Going, everything in front belongs to us, everything behind belongs to the picture. Now, when we approach a picture in a gallery, We switch off our 9 points of assessment because we know it's a picture. We know it's an illusion. It's post-Renaissance, an illusion that makes it look like the picture is three-dimensional. We know it's not, but we understand all the visual clues. So we switch off all of that real analysis. The problem occurs when that picture is a hologram. And we're very, very good at trying to reassess how we look at things. Because if you look at a painting exhibition, we understand about the boundary, we understand about the frame of this object, we switch off our three-dimensional analysis because we know where the picture plane is, we know the picture plane is an illusion, if it's abstract it doesn't matter, we still understand that there might be depth. But what's curious is that we can do that when we're looking straight ahead at it. And we can pre-distort it in our heads when we're looking at it obliquely, and we can pre-distort it when we're looking at it even more obliquely. So we're really, really good at this. holograms have those viewing angles. You know, you look at it from an oblique angle, there's nothing to see. Already there's a slight friction in the way that we approach it. So what I want to do is I want to try and explore how the hologram can be used as a frame, using as a sort of lens to look at this, some of the pieces that I've done, just because I'm familiar with it, but actually because of the some of the things that people have talked about earlier and yesterday, I think quite a lot of us are doing this. What I think is particularly interesting, Rick said yesterday when he showed the 11:11 dot dot, and it's, you know, 11 minutes past 11 and the alarm's on, and mentioned about it only really makes sense if you contextualize it. I think it's very important that we actually try and contextualize what we do in a way that allows people into it. And David, when he was showing his, you know, his really, really long hologram, he actually said, and I've written this down, about not taking the a hologram, not considering a hologram with reverence. With reverence, we're very sort of reverent about holography, and it's good that we're not, because let's get it a bit dirty, because it means we can try and interrogate things with it. So this is a floor piece that uses fragments of holograms, and the framing takes place in this case through this very large glass disc that the holographic fragments are on. So immediately there's a sense that when you approach this thing, you know, people kneel down and they look at it, they can move around it, you're not looking at it head on. So you're not, there isn't that friction of confusion of analysis, perceptual analysis. You approach it, I think, as a piece of sculpture, although I'm happy to be corrected. The viewing zones of the holograms are completely dispersed because the fragments are positioned in lots of different angles. You cannot see this entire, the content of the hologram, which are gestural marks, the drawings. You can't see them from one point, and that's not the aim of the piece. The aim of the piece is to allow you to look at these fragments and see bits of information. So I actually think I'm a drawer. I think I draw. It happens to be manifest through holography. And so the sense of framing is how, not only how you actually physically place it in a situation, but how you conceptually place, how you frame it conceptually. This is a follow-on piece from that. So both of these pieces are illuminated by drawings. So they're made, I've done a drawing, which is that circle and those lines, and I photographed it, put it in a 35mm slide, put it in a projector above the holographic installation and projected down onto it. So the holograms are drawings, they're illuminated by drawings. So drawings are illuminating the drawings, and there's a sense of connection there. Here, the framing again is the sense that you approach it as a piece of sculpture, and it's actually bounded by that circle. Curiously, people wouldn't pass over the line. It became a real curious barrier. They would just stand and look at it, except for the people that were looking at the painting on the wall and then would walk onto it backwards. And just a word of caution, both of these pieces don't exist anymore. They've been destroyed by people trampling on them. You think you'd learn, wouldn't you? So by using the hologram as itself, as an object, without it being bounded by some sort of framing device, the frame device becomes the object or the space in which it's placed. In this case, this is an installation of holograms that are actually, they're glass holograms just tucked into the wall, and they're illuminated straight down so that the light illuminates the hologram, but it also causes these shadows to be cast. And there's a really interesting that sense that those shadows become symbols of a plinth when we understand the vocabulary of the gallery, and that if you put it on a plinth, it's a piece of sculpture. So this raises some questions that perhaps can't be immediately answered, and I like that issue. So again, they're drawings. They're just lines, analytical lines defining a boundary, and they're presented in a way that allows you to see the hologram as itself, the thickness of it. And the same thing in fairly large installations. This was at Jonathan Ross's gallery in London a few years ago. And it's this undulating line of rusted metal sheets that go through the gallery. It was made specifically for the gallery, for solo show there. And they each contain a very small hologram of a pseudoscopic hologram of the shadow of liquid. So again, I consider those to be drawing. And by placing them in this way, they act as a barrier between you and the traditional aspect of where you display visual arts, which is often on the wall. I realize that that's not necessarily the case anymore, but it helped to establish a vocabulary, I thought. And this one really did deal with the aspect of framing. It's a found curved glass sheet, which I think came from a mini miner from about 1950, and I found it in a hedgerow and had it in the studio for a very long time, wondering what I was going to do with it. And it's a bit, I think what people have been saying earlier, particularly Betsy, about that recycling of things. Often things are around and you don't know their relevance until later. Sometimes looking back actually helps activate what you're trying to do. So it's a hologram of the shadow of water, of liquid, pseudoscopic, so that these lines appear above the hologram, and it's placed on that glass sheet. So it's sort of Petri dish, examination, possible growth, maybe. It's illuminated from behind the observer. So as you approach this piece and get to the position where you can see the hologram, your head gets in the way of the light, and you switch off the hologram. And it's a reverse reward, I think, that you finally made it. You finally got to the point where people go, no, you need to stand there to look at that hologram. And you stand there, and then there's nothing to see. And possibly that's what this is about. There isn't anything to see there. Perhaps it's about you imagining what's there. And actually, you frame yourself, and there's a vocabulary there which I find really quite useful. Okay, I'm not going to talk about this too much because there's a poster session on this and I deal with it, I put some details about it in the paper that goes with this. But it's, again, this is a holographic roof. I'll talk about it later if you want me to talk about it, but it was installed in an exhibition recently. And the last couple. This piece that was in Korea just recently. Again, still this motif of drawing on water. It's almost 4x5 hologram, and it's held up by a blue industrial G-clamp. So there's no attempt to hide the framing. It's this object. And for a lot of the time, you can't see the content of the hologram. I find that okay. That's very interesting, because it's about it possibly being a sculptural object that you can interrogate from different angles. And that I find particularly interesting, that sense that you can really examine the edge of this thing. You can see in real honesty that it is just this tiny amount of space. And just to finish, this was an exhibition where I was invited to send a hologram, or send a piece of artwork with its packaging. And the curators particularly wanted a hologram, which surprised me. So each of the artists that were selected gave this piece of work. It was unpacked and displayed with its packaging. So those of you that are familiar with Agfa-Gevaert plates will know the little red bit of plastic on the side. It wasn't illuminated. It didn't have special lighting. Part of the prerequisite was just put it in there. And I found that really interesting. You could really start to examine it. And the final piece is this that's just been shown at the Bonington Gallery, Nottingham Trent University. And it's, again, a very small rectangular hologram of the shadow of liquid, but illuminated by a traditional acknowledged design icon, which is this Tizio lamp designed by Richard Saper. So the lamp provides you with an indicator of where to look, and the frame is the gallery floor. I'm not going to read it, you can read that. So I think actually those are the things that we should be dealing with, maybe, or that I should be dealing with in a way of sort of opening up and putting pressure on the critical aspects of how we present holography or the use of holography in a creative environment. Thank you very much.
Do we have questions for Andy?
Oh, Dietmar's going to ask a hard question.
Yes. I see wonderful image of light design. Holograms are just pretext? I don't see the holograms inside.
That's okay. I mean, I think that's actually the point, that you can engage with the piece of work by entering it through lots of different channels. So if you see it as the object, as the light, that's absolutely fine. And maybe you don't ever look at the hologram. I don't think my intention isn't to bamboozle people with a beautiful image. I want them to actually work a little, maybe arrogantly work a little bit, and try and engage with it on a different level. I'm not sure that answers your question, but I actually think that there is a balance that happens, and I'm not sure it's successful yet. I propose that this is a way of engaging with something. I'm unsure how successful it is, but I'm going to continue trying to have a go. Any other questions?
Oh. Hi. Your early drawings, of course, were so incredible, sort of showing how you could obviate illusions of other representation systems in drawing. And I'm just really interested in how you've moved from hand-drawn lines that you used to do straight onto the glass, and you're now using water. Could you please explain a little bit, like, the new work with the G-clamp, like how the drawing works in that artwork?
Yeah, I'll try and do it very quickly. I haven't got a lab, and I don't make holograms to order. Quite a lot of the holograms that I made were made quite a long time ago. And it's the sort of Stilton Cheese method of holography, where I made a lot of work with marks, with gestural marks, in this case with water, and then left them to sort of ferment, and then you come back and they make some sort of sense. So then I pull them out. They're actually made, they're dynitric holograms of liquid on a piece of glass in front of the in front of the holographic plate. The reference beam causes that shadow to appear behind. When you turn it round, the shadow appears to be in front. So, and I know you're not supposed to be able to do that, but it does work. So there's something very interesting about the sense of vertical liquid that's still, and I think it connects with what Setsuko was talking about earlier, in that sense of freezing certain things. But to actually put it on a G-clamp, it's an indicator of how things are held. It's a practical G-clamp. I use it in my own DIY at home. So it has a practical existence beyond its opportunity to support a drawing that might be visible or might not. Does that answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Andy.